Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talebi. And joining me in studio this evening to deal with your questions are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Simon Brown from Just One Lap. If you'd like to send us questions, if you're not whipping it up ahead of tomorrow's Heritage Day public holiday, please do. You can SMS 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Simon, Gary, nice to see you both. And Gary, congratulations. The Intellidex Stockbroker of the Year Awards was scooped or won or walked off very handily by Rand Swiss, so well done to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm going to open some free trading accounts for Simon and myself now.
Of course. You guys are not already clients. That hurts.
Well, we shall rectify matters forthwith. It wasn't a great day on the market today, though, down 1.5%, but I wonder, was there a bit of... was there, to some extent, an exaggeration of any moves because trade might have been quite skinny ahead of tomorrow's public holiday? What did you expect?
Well, I suppose it's a local public holiday, so it's, you know, like international volume is good. But, yeah, looking at it, it didn't really feel like the market was too thin. Like it felt like there was activity. But, yeah, looking at it, I mean, sure, so some of it might be coming up. But I think we were actually just playing catch-up to what happened in the U.S. Over the weekend. U.S. markets were down, at least from when we closed on Friday. So we were playing a little bit of catch-up. We got some weak economic numbers out of the EU today as well. That didn't help matters. And I think people are really concerned about global growth. There's a lot of really big risk events coming up. U.S. markets are at all-time highs. And, you know, we've got Brexit to deal with sometime next month. And we've got, I suppose, everyone trying to grapple with the idea that global growth is going to be more subdued than initially expected. And the big IMF and World Bank forecasts, people are starting to call those into question as well. So I think, you know, that kind of like dichotomy we've had between, you know, like pessimism and optimism as the trade war ebbs and flows, that's going to continue. And today, you know, I think we had some Chinese officials canceling visits to U.S. farms. And that's why everyone's panicking. You know, that's one of the headlines. But it's just concern. Market's too high.
Yeah. I mean, Simon, it's, you know, these, the trade issues, it's really incredibly unhelpful because you feel like you make one step forward and then there's huge relief and then it sparks a nice big rally on the stock market and then it's all withdrawn a couple of days later.
Except you're 100% right, and that's perception, and it's how it's playing out with the orange man in his Twitter account and markets and the like. But the reality on the ground is that's not the case. The reality is that there have been trade tariffs now for over a year between the US and China. The only difference is that we've added to it, and yes, he's delayed some at some points, et cetera, et cetera. But we're in a worse situation vis-a-vis tariffs than we were a year ago or 2 years ago when we didn't have any, or 3 years ago when we didn't have a Trump. And what we're seeing is, to Gary's point, I mean, IMF and World Bank, they've been slowly bringing down their forecasts, but turns out not slowly enough. And data coming out of markets such as Korea this morning, South Korea, of course, Japan and others, are showing that this is not just a little spat between the US and China. It's a big spat. And you know, when the elephants fight, everyone else gets hurt. And we're seeing the spin-off into those other economies. And you know, I was reading something, and I forget the exact specifics, but there's quasi-trade wars between Japan and South Korea. Japan won't sell certain requirements they need for their semiconductor business because their concerns are on supply, and so there's stuff happening all over the place, and the bottom line is it's hurting the global economy.
And in fact, China's got its own issues to deal with given the protests in Hong Kong, and there was quite an interesting report today on how that's caused IPOs to dry up. And you've got AB InBev, which is going to be listing a unit in Hong Kong, but it is one of the very few companies still intent on doing so. And that's had a huge impact on that stock market. So, you know, China has got its own issues that it has to deal with as well. Yeah, throw that into the mix.
There's fears that China might take a strong crackdown on Hong Kong. I don't think so. There's another date, the handover, which happened in 97. And there's another date, which was 45 years or so later. So, and then they get total. China's far too canny an operator to they learned from Tiananmen Square. They're not going to do the croc. It's not helping. And to your point, IPOs are drying up. Tourism is hurting there as well. But in terms of trade war, China's in a, in one sense, a weaker position because they've got no ammunition left to impose onto America. But in the other sense, they're in a stronger position because they're a command economy. They control it. They can, you know, they own the press, so they can have whatever story. There's no lying media, as Trump would say. They can
no fake news.
Yeah, they have that level of control, so they can, you know, they can turn on taps, whereas they don't have a Federal Reserve boneheads and etc. So they've got more staying power in that sense because of the control they have over the economy.
Yeah. Gary, if we had a look at some of the worst performers in the top 40 today, it was quite a sort of diverse bunch, but they were the stalwarts. So Tiger Brands was off almost 4%. Discovery came off almost 4% again. So having kind of recovered, it's now back. And then NASPAS down 2.6%. Any sort of common theme between the shares that came under severe pressure today?
They're all former stalwarts that you are not listed on the JSE. And it's interesting because we were chatting about it on the desk today because weirdly everyone was at work. No one took the day off, which is strange. But we were kind of throwing around ideas for like a Core and Explore portfolio. And we were saying, let's just, you know, for kind of smaller clients that can't kind of have a pure stockbroking portfolio, let's look at kind of like building a basket of ETFs and sticking some really quality South African local blue chips around the edges. And we kind of looked at the market and went, so that's not really Sasol anymore, is it?
It's not many of those.
And we kind of like, which ones would we really just stake, which ones would you stake your reputation on that these five South African companies will not go pear-shaped? And that just the fact that we're sitting on asking that question is terrifying. Mm. I mean, you ask about the theme. I mean, Sasol, I mean, we know what's going on at Sasol. I mean, there's, you know, terrible overruns at Lake Charles. I mean, people are really concerned about what's happening there. At the same prior time, we've got the oil price coming down as things settle around the Saudi Arabia issues. Discovery. I mean, we've got all the local issues around Discovery. We've got obviously, you know, what the potential impact of national health insurance is going to be and kind of the panic around that. Their results haven't been great recently either. So it's, I mean, this we're down, and the concern is that our companies are not in good shape.
You could just put them into gold shares, Gary. Put them into gold fields. The strongest performer.
And I mean, I've chatted to Nicole. I mean, if you laugh about Goldfields. I mean, we chatted about the, like, after the spin-off of Sibanye, when Sibanye was shooting the lights out, and he, you know, kind of joked about, like, he was saying, oh, we left a little bit of juice in the orange left for squeezing, and we're like, you left a lot of juice in there. But now look at it. I mean, they essentially, they've got South Deep. It's an offshore, like, essentially an offshore gold miner, and suddenly things aren't looking so silly.
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, our market's been sideways for 5 years, but it's been a tough decade. I mean, go back to the World Cup in 2010, and since then, for our economy, it has just been a slow grind, and unfortunately, the grind has been heading south, not in any other way. You know, when we had the three M's, Mbeki, Manuel, and Mbeweni in charge of our budgets and the like, we were hitting 5%.
5%? We had a budget surplus. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that we had a budget surplus?
Cutting our taxes every year in those sort of heady days. And we've just had the flip of that. And it is hurting. It is absolutely hurting. And I think a lot of the scandals that we've seen, and not all of them, have come to light because of the tough times. And I'm not in any way exonerating them, but there's some companies there that could have traded their way out of it in a better circumstance. Yeah. And that, you know, so it just self-fulfills. And then, you know, and then to Gary's point, now we look at it and we're like, there ain't nothing here I want to own. And it then becomes even more self-fulfilling and depressing. And so we drink.
Yes, which we're all going to hit the bottle en masse, including our viewers, after 8 o'clock. There's one company we could buy, and that's NASPAS or Prosus, because really what you're buying is China, a bet on the Chinese consumer, but also a bet on all these internet assets that NASPAS has assiduously built up over the year. And there is a question just asking about the ratio. So please ask your guests, what should the Prosus to NASPAS ratio be? In other words, if Prosus were to trade at 1,000 Rand, what should NASPAS price be? Is it not the price that you see today?
It is. I mean, so one could work it out. So we need to, and the reason why it's complicated is because I don't know how many shares, because of course the N shares and the A shares complicate, and they both got processed, so there's issues around that. and locally the N shares are the A shares, etc. But certainly there's a spreadsheet calculation, and you need to figure out what the number of process shares there are, what the market cap is of that, and therefore Naspers owns 73%, and what, if any, value do you want to give to the South African assets, which is mostly Media 24, Takealot's, and then some other bits and pieces. And from that, you can now calculate the value. The simpler way is to say that the market's probably got it right, because if the market hasn't got it right, someone out there has done the spreadsheet and will arbitrage it to close that gap.
Yeah, which is probably what you should be doing, right, Gary, for your clients?
Well, it depends. Our clients, we don't run an arbitrage portfolio for clients. It's very high-risk speculative. You need like a very, you know, a certain type of cost profile to do it, and it's generally done algorithmically anyway. So, I mean, for the viewer, I mean, it's not complicated to kind of build out a little spreadsheet model which will give you a fair value. I'll put it together. We'll stick it on Twitter maybe tomorrow or the next day, since tomorrow's
a holiday.
The thing is, do you even actually need a spreadsheet model if the price...
It will track and it will be disconnected, but the price, like, also remember, we don't have a lot of pricing history now as well, and you know, like, we can kind of run the fair value where we think it is going to be, but the market, I mean, remember, in the end of the day, a market is buyers and sellers and where they're willing to assign the value. So as Simon said, it's going to be about what value do you assign to the South African assets. That's going to be key to your thinking. Now the another way of doing it, without, as Simon said, just doing the kind of like the fair value, doing like a fundamental, like, kind of sum of the parts and calculating what it all should be. You can also wait. Let's say we waited a couple of months, get a little bit of trade history, maybe a year even, and you'll kind of see the relative between the two. And then that's an easier and more comfortable way to trade it, because you can see what the market is assigning the assets, and you can just trade the fluctuations between them. That's another way of doing it.
And there is a chance that Naspers trades at a discount. I mean, much as it traded at a discount to Tencent. And there are reasons
why. It
still
trades at a discount, right?
Sure. And there's reasons why. One is just the typical holding company discount. But more than that, the problem with Naspers, with the weighting, and that weighting is still, 15% or something, is that as a fund manager, if that's your benchmark, your question, top 40, your question is usually, you look at a stock and you say, am I over or under or at weight? With Naspers, your question is, how underweight am I? You can't go overweight Naspers, because putting 20% into a single stock is criminal. So then it's, and which means that actually there's just not enough capital in our market to close that gap on Tencent, which is why it got to at 1.40%.
Yeah.
Could that now happen with Prosus? And the answer is it could. I mean, so there could be now two gaps that happens, Prosus to Tencent, and that will hopefully in theory close, and then Prosus to Naspers, we could start to see a discount forming there, which, to Gary's point, is we need time for this to sort of really shake itself out.
Hmm. Okay. But at the moment, Prosus is about, 1,100. Naspers is trading at, where did it close
about
today?
About 22, 23.
So it's like a 1 to 3 ratio.
So Naspers just over twice what Prosus is.
Yeah. Okay. We get, this gent clearly feels like we haven't answered his question, and it's over a US stock called The Trade Desk, and he says, a special evening to the award-winning portfolio manager, Gary Boyson.
It's not me. I didn't win these awards. The company won the awards, but thank you.
Well, take the glory. So it's a US company called The Trade Desk. He has asked us about it before. Did the panel see growth in digital advertising, although they're more focused on buying advert space? So digital advertising is dominated, as we said, we were discussing this before we went on air, by Facebook and Google.
Yeah.
I mean, is there room for another player?
There's 49% room, because between Google and Facebook, they control around 51% of the global ad space, the digital ad space environment. So, you know, it is, but again, you have to look at like the size of the market as well. And, you know, the problem for me is that generally with these kinds of tech plays is it becomes a winner-take-all world, in that the person with the best offering, you know, you can easily switch from one to the other. The one that is showing actual, value to marketing companies, those are the ones that win everything, because it's easy to roll out. This is not a car that has to be manufactured in a plant and there's, you know, transport costs. It's literally the best product wins.
And they're like a big
wins.
Magnet. They just end up sucking everything
And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And because you've got this kind of like one firm takes the prize, then takes everything, you know, if you're second tier, like often, maybe it's, you know, one or two or even three firm, there's room for one, two, three, even three firms. But smaller tier firms are going to suffer. So I don't know trade desk, you know, in detail, other than it like operates in the online advertising space. But just, I think, you know, you look at the cash that's available to the likes of Google and Facebook, and the amount of resources that they can bring to bear. It's you know, it's very difficult to innovate past them.
Yeah, or you probably end up getting bought out by them.
Perhaps, and certainly, I mean, there are, you know, there's New York Times, for example, who've gone the paywall route, and there's others who have actively not gone, and they have their own internal ad teams and who sell one-on-one, etc. But the model of Trade Desk and Google and Facebook and Amazon, although with Amazon you're just advertising in their walled garden, it absolutely works. What it's doing is it's squeezing prices, which is squeezing the revenues, and that's an issue which everyone in the media understands. And to Gary's point is, what's your differentiator that you do better than Google that Google can't copy tomorrow? Mm. And that's your biggest challenge. You come up with something new, Google's like,
oh, yeah, nice. That's a good idea. Mm. All right, we'll throw our tech team at it. We have to leave it there for the moment, though. If you'd like to send us questions, please do SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessTV. Right, let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets at the moment. We followed a suit to their declines last week, but they have bounced back a little bit today. The S&P up a 0.1%, as is the NASDAQ, and the Dow Jones also similarly stronger. Across the Atlantic, however, you had the FTSE 100 pulling back a quarter, the CAC under pressure today, and so was the DAX down 1%. So the JSE closed about 1.5%, 1.4%, the top 40 down 1.5%, weaker. And still with me in studio are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Simon Brown from Just One Lap. We take heart that there's been a little mini bounce in U.S. markets this evening?
Very mini, but we'll take it.
We'll take it. Huh?
And what we're hoping is another little bounce on Tuesday and we can come in guns blazing on Wednesday.
Indeed. Okay, getting back to questions, and they have been, as you would imagine, rather quiet this evening. But we talked about the Brexit, the likelihood and the possibility of a no-deal Brexit sometime in October, which is looming fast. And the question is it a good idea to buy into and Capco now at these low prices?
Nope, they'll be cheaper. If Brexit goes horrible, and if I were a betting man, I'd put my £10 on it going horrible. Whether the market, the knee-jerk response will be, and it'll sell them down. And Intu's apparently got more buyers, but a number of buyers have looked and said thanks, but no thanks. Capco, you might want to wait for them to break it up and buy the better assets. But a bad Brexit outcome is going to be bad for UK assets.
Whether it's priced in or not.
Yeah, in the short term, it's not priced in. And what I'm suggesting is that on the 1st of November, you might get a really good price on some of those assets.
That is a terrifying thought. Gary, would you concur? Or do you be a bit of a contrarian?
I think I'm going to be a bit of a contrarian. Yeah, so I think, I take Simon's point, and there's a lot of fear out there. Unfortunately, with markets, always trying to, when you're buying a listed financial instrument, you're buying a price that is the prediction of predictions. You're buying something that everyone is looking at that, and if everyone feels like Simon is feeling right now, it's already in the price. And you've got to kind of try and like almost predict what the predictors are predicting. So it becomes quite complex. Now, if you look at Capco from a fundamental point of view, you're kind of pricing in macro risk onto this, which is very difficult. It's very difficult to have models. It's an event that's going to happen that's going to change everything. And you've got to try and work out what is going to happen to property in Covent Garden and Earl's Court and how that's going to be affected, you know, in the short term. I have no idea, you know, and that's, I think, Simon's point. I think there's going to be a lot of volatility. So, you know, straight after, you know, if there's a no Brexit deal, you quite possibly could get much better prices. But if you're taking a long-term view and you're saying we have a lot of pessimism around Brexit at the moment, you know, bad or good, what is the view 5-10 years out? Because that's kind of where you should be looking. And because that'll actually price quicker than 5-10 years time. You've got to say that the time to buy property assets in a regulatory jurisdiction that is very safe. If I had to have a choice between buying UK property assets ahead of Brexit or buying South African farming assets now, I would probably still pick UK assets because the regulatory framework, the protection of property rights, is more stringent in the UK. Absolutely. And in that environment, I would say, when is the best time to buy property? When there's blood on the streets. When there's, you're trying to adopt a time of peak pessimism and take a long-term view and hopefully still have tenants for the properties and still manage to get a decent yield out of it while you wait for those property assets to reprice. Yeah. That said, it is a call on Boris Johnson as well. Now, Boris Johnson is, you know, hardcore Brexit man, and you know, if you look at him, he has to go into the negotiations with a view that it's Brexit.
Brexit or bust.
Yeah, but it's like a no deal is a possibility. Like it's got to be a possibility to have effective negotiations. That's just absolutely logical.
Yeah.
And while if you look at Boris Johnson as a person, you know, he's not this kind of silly, charismatic guy. I mean, this is a shrewd, shrewd operator. The reason I say that, I don't know if you saw the whole concept of the buses, like the whole bus scandal, it was in the paper, where literally, you know, there's an interview with a journalist and he's going on about how I have buses, I like to paint the faces of the buses.
And the journalist asks him, what do you do in your spare time?
You were looking at this thing and thinking, this man has lost the plot. How can I trust this man to do Brexit? If you dig a little deep into that story, you'll see that he had a campaign around Brexit that was on buses, and the top Google search for Boris Johnson was this very embarrassing story. The reason that he went on and made that interview was so that interview Google search ranked better than his embarrassing scandal, so that he could deliberately downrank. Absolutely crafted. He uses that persona to get away with it. Like, I mean, he's an ex Eton guy, same as like a David Cameron. Yet, you know, he gets mass appeal because of this persona that he builds. So I think to assume that Boris Johnson is not a shrewd operator that has the ability to deliver Brexit, I think you're underestimating him. Yeah.
I have to just say though, if you were looking at Intu or Capco, I think I would far rather buy Capco because I can't see London diminishing as a centre of cultural importance, as a place that people want to travel to and go to on holiday. Into, clearly, I think we have begun, it's possibly the beginning of the end for the mall as we knew it with the advent of online retail.
And in the UK, I've got family who live there, and I mean, my brother-in-law buys everything on Amazon, and I was in France, and it's no different. I mean, when I say, you know, salt, like, oh yeah, we need salt, okay, and he orders salt on Amazon, and it arrives tomorrow, and I mean, yeah, he doesn't go to the shops.
Sounds like a bit of a hermit.
Yeah, a bit.
He might have some other
problems. He's a retired oil and gas individual.
Just a quick comment before we get to stock picks, and also one of the questions is related to your stock pick this evening, Simon. There wasn't too much company news out today, but there was a bit. Omnia, I see that 96.6% of shareholders decided to follow the rights. So there was still a small portion of those that didn't. And this was notwithstanding the fact that the rights offer was fully underwritten by the big shareholders. Does that say anything to you?
And if you weren't going to follow your rights, you should have sold your nilpaids into the market, which means that some people just actually let it lapse. But a number that small is not impossible that it's a communication error or something, or some broker didn't submit docs, etc. Short answer, 96 is good enough to say, you know, that's definitely a first.
Yeah, okay. And Omnia, this is a company maybe that now has more of a future, having got this capital raise under its belt.
Yeah, you never want to be the one who's going into the rights issue but coming out, and then, you know, the balance sheet should be in a better position, etc. So then it deserves a second look. When companies do rights issues, I come back to them post rights issue.
Yeah. Okay. Just very quick comment. Did you see WeWork, SoftBank, mm-hmm. which is the big Japanese investor, actually wanting to demote Adam Neumann, who is the founder of the company, the CEO, from his position as CEO? The IPOs, well, I guess it's been scuttled at this point. Is it something that you were interested in or looking at buying?
No, I think everyone's been looking at WeWork and going, how on earth are they getting this?
Not for
sheer entertainment value.
Right, okay.
But it's a predatory CEO. That is certainly not out. There's a principal agent problem there. We can see it quite clearly.
And it happened with Uber. Remember, they had to get rid of their CEO to get the new guy in to get the IPO.
Yeah, okay. So stock picks this evening. Gary, you're going for a company called IHA. Oh, no, sorry, not a company, an ETF.
Yeah, so it's it's an ETF in medical devices run by iShares, at least Core Shares. iShares. It's very, very reasonably priced at about, total expense ratio, I think, is 0.34. If you screen out on that chart, you'll see kind of the performance that, it's been doing recently. Now, as Simon and me were chatting off air, just saying that Simon was telling me that, you know, medical devices is actually a field of, I suppose, healthcare that is not as well regulated as, the typical like pharma side of the market. So you don't kind of face the same regulatory burdens. But the reason that I actually picked the stock, and it's something that we do kind of whenever we're doing portfolio reweightings and we're looking for new stocks, is you kind of go and look at what all the big blue chip fund managers, best performing fund managers are doing. They have to report what they're buying and selling. And really across the board, medical devices have been something that's being accumulated by the big active asset managers internationally. And it's everything inside here. You've got Medtronic, Abbott, and all the large kind of medical device companies. And they've been bought almost across the board at least. So the big asset managers are buying into the whole sector and the concept behind it. It's, you know, technologically, this is somewhere that I think does have a lot of runway as well. So we were talking earlier about Trade Desk and how what is the future growth potential of like online advertising, for example. The advertising market is kind of like limited. It's difficult to see where the growth is going to come from. But medical devices and medical technology, it seems almost unlimited. You can serve ads in only so many different ways. Yeah. But when it comes to healthcare, people are prepared to pay almost no matter what.
Yeah.
And with the continued kind of innovation in technology, it's something that you would want to be invested in for 5 or 10 years because it's going to continually change. The ETF obviously you benefit from the natural reweighting as well. So, you know, as a company kind of falls out, you're going to be replaced with the next best medical device company.
Yeah, interesting option. And then the question, Simon, was please ask the panel to argue for and against ShopRite. So I don't know if you can the pros and the cons.
The cons are that they lost the plot, that Africa is hurting them immensely, and they're getting cost squeezed, whether they've managed to hold on to their margins. The four is that people will continue to eat, that low LSM is always going to be the space, that Africa went from 1.6 billion profit in 2016 to 250-odd million loss this year. I'm not sure we might not get back to 1.6 in a hurry, but those issues will come and go with currencies, hyperinflation, they will fade in time. Their self-inflicted wounds, the strikes, the IT issues, etc., are behind them. They managed to hang on to margins. It's always been my preferred food retailer for the last decade and a half. What I saw in the inflation data last week was we're seeing a little bit of inflation coming through in food. ShopRite store has 10,000 items in zero or deflation. And that means they sell it at the same price, but their costs increase. If we can start seeing some food inflation come through, we can start to see Africa coming right. In the 120s, ShopRite looking attractive.
Yeah, okay, great. Simon, Gary, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Now you are liberated to go wild, and as are the viewers. The Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss, Simon Brown from Just One Lap, and we'll be back with Stockwatch on Wednesday night at 7:30. Have a great Heritage Day. So StockPicks this evening. Gary, you're going for a company called IHA. Oh, no, sorry, not a company, an ETF.
Yeah, so it's it's an ETF in medical devices run by iShares, at least Core Shares. iShares. It's very, very reasonably priced at about, total expense ratio, I think, is 0.34. If you screen out on that chart, you'll see kind of the performance that it's been doing recently. Now, as Simon and me were chatting off air, just saying that Simon was telling me that, you know, medical devices is actually a field of, I suppose, healthcare that is not as well regulated as, the typical like pharma side of the market. So you don't kind of face the same regulatory burdens. But the reason that I actually picked the stock, and it's something that we do kind of whenever we're doing portfolio reweightings and we're looking for new stocks, is you kind of go and look at what all the big blue chip fund managers those best performing fund managers are doing. They have to report what they're buying and selling. And really across the board, medical devices have been something that's being accumulated by the big active asset managers internationally. And it's everything inside here. You've got Medtronic, Abbott, and all the large kind of medical device companies. And they've been bought almost across the board at least. So the big asset managers are buying into the whole sector and the concept behind it. It's, you know, technologically, this is somewhere that I think does have a lot of runway as well. So we were talking earlier about Trade Desk and how what is the future growth potential of like online advertising, for example. The advertising market is kind of like limited. It's difficult to see where the growth is going to come from. But medical devices and medical technology, it seems almost unlimited. You can serve ads in only so many different ways.
Yeah.
But when it comes to healthcare, people are prepared to pay almost no matter what.
Yeah.
And with the continued kind of innovation in technology, it's something that you would want to be invested in for 5 or 10 years because it's going to continually change. The ETF obviously you benefit from the natural reweighting as well. So, you know, as a company kind of falls out, you're going to be replaced with the next best medical device company.
Yeah, interesting option. And then the question, Simon, was please ask the panel to argue for and against ShopRite. So I don't know if you can the pros and the cons.
The cons are that they lost the plot, that Africa is hurting them immensely, and they're getting cost squeezed, although they've managed to hold on to their margins. The four is that people will continue to eat, that low LSM is always going to be the space, that Africa went from 1.6 billion profit in 2016 to 250-odd million loss this year. I'm not sure we might not get back to 1.6 in a hurry, but those issues will come and go with currencies, hyperinflation, they will fade in time. Their self-inflicted wounds, the strikes, the IT issues, etc., are behind them. They managed to hang on to margins. And it's always been my preferred food retailer for the last decade and a half. What I saw in the inflation data last week was we're seeing a little bit of inflation coming through in food. ShopRite still has 10,000 items in zero or deflation. And that means they sell it at the same price, but their costs increase. If we can start seeing some food inflation come through, we can start to see Africa coming right. In the 120s, ShopRite looking attractive.
Yeah, okay, great. Simon, Gary, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Now you are liberated to go wild, and as are the viewers. Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss, Simon Brown from Just One Lap, and we'll be back with Stockwatch on Wednesday night at 7:30. Have a great Heritage Day.